Welcome to Focus on the Community, a weekly program that focuses on issues and events in our community.
And happy weekend, and welcome to another edition of Focus on Community. You can catch this show right here over the next few minutes, or you can also, if you can't listen all the way through, catch it as a podcast on our website. The guest today joining us is Kelly Fuller, who actually works with Hamilton Center here in town. Kelly, how you doing?
Just fine.
Tell us a little bit exactly your position with Hamilton Center.
So I work with, I'm considered a homeless outreach care coordinator, care manager, mm-hmm. and I work with individuals who are displaced or at imminent risk of being displaced, and I help them get connected to behavioral health services, any kind of addiction services. We have primary health care. We provide insurance, helping them get linkage to insurance as well.
There has been kind of a talk about the homeless population and the homeless issues in the news a lot here over the past several weeks or so. It's always kind of been on the outside, on the periphery a lot over the past several years because we've had a problem here throughout the Wabash Valley for a long time. But now it's kind of in the news again. So tell us, how big of a problem is it really, not just in Terre Haute, Vigo County, but when we talk about the outlying areas, unfortunately, Brazil, Clinton, Sullivan, even smaller areas, Staunton, Corey, those places, some of those small, we kind of tend to ignore them simply because Terre Haute's bigger. So how much of a problem is it really, not just in Terre Haute, but around the valley?
Well, I'm in charge of the point in time count, which is a yearly homeless count that HUD puts on. And we have found in those locations, and I get phone calls frequently from other counties with individuals who are living in rural areas. So there's no shelters other than coming to Terre Haute, which makes things very difficult. Some people don't have transportation, but we do have that hidden kind of in the shadows population of people who are afraid to admit they're homeless, or they're living in houses that may only have one utility on. They may not have running water. They may not have electricity or gas. Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger problem than what we recognize. With the count that I do, it's a very specific chronic homelessness count. So it's not going to count those people who might stay at Aunt Betty's house one night and then a friend's house another night and then might be stuck living in their car or in an abandoned building.
Out of that, though, when you take that, how many are we talking about? I mean, are we talking a few hundred, a few thousand, or I mean,
we usually have a 2% increase, and we haven't had the numbers from last year's count. It ranges, well, right now in our outer counties, we don't have the support of having the communities that heavily involved. So we're hoping to recruit some people, our agencies that might be willing to participate in the count in January. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at anywhere of the just straight displaced individuals in the 40s to 60 range. That's people in non-habitable places, mm-hmm. not including the couch surfing. And that's usually in the Vigo area.
Right.
So
if folks would want to help you with this, so they just contact Hamilton Center and say maybe they'd like to help?
I can give you a phone number that's directly to my office, which might be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure. It's 812-231-8322.
All right. So if you want to talk to Kelly Fuller about that, then be sure and give her a call. As we talk about the homeless situation in town, let's face it, there are certain foregone conclusions that everybody has in their mind that are probably not true. So let's talk about some of the different folks that we have that are homeless in our area. They're not necessarily all drug users. They're not necessarily all folks with mental illness, although there are those out there. Mm-hmm. But when you see one, that doesn't mean that they have all those problems. So tell us about what really is the homeless person like in our area?
Well, it can be persons living paycheck to paycheck and a loss of a job or a physical health problem has struck them and now they can't work. So if you lose your job, in which we see quite a few individuals that have had the health problems hit them, and trying to apply for disability or get some kind of support is going to be very difficult for them because it can take years to get Social Security. Mm-hmm. You have to go through a lot of different processes. And then if you have limited resources, you really can't work if you're applying for disability. It's kind of a catch-22. So if you work, then you get disqualified. So you're kind of just stuck in that situation. We have families where kids get affected as well, mm-hmm. simply because their parents might have lost a job or they got evicted from their housing situation because they couldn't afford it. So then they're living on the streets. And we work with the schools. The school has different programs to help them to make sure that they can stay in their school district that they've been going to.
In that regard, the schools a lot of times are tipped off before anybody else catches up.
Right, which they try to serve that population themselves because, you know, everything with HIPAA and privacy affects that. So,
well, let's talk about these folks, though. I mean, where are they? Because a lot of folks will say, you know, when I drive to work, and myself included, I don't see people on the street corner that I think of as homeless, although it quite honestly maybe could be them. Because before we went on the air, we talked about the fact that these folks are a lot of times, they're right in front of your face, but they're hidden. So where are all these people that are homeless that we're worried about and trying to help?
A lot of them are in encampments. A lot are in abandoned buildings. The whole purpose is they live in the shadows because they don't want you to see them. Because if you see them, then that means that that's putting them at risk of losing where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they do stay hidden. Most of the time, they get up early in the morning and are moving. So like at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, they're out of their encampment and heading off to go to the soup kitchens, to a library, someplace cool that they can go to. Sometimes they go to restaurants.
Yeah. Are they hidden because they don't want help or just because they're too embarrassed to get it?
Most of the time it's too embarrassed. There's a shame factor set aside, and we kind of discussed this earlier with the fact that if you're homeless, they feel invisible. They don't even like the word homeless a lot of times. So I use displaced, which you might hear me say off and on throughout this, but they're basically in a situation of shame. And then you throw on other stigmas because I work with people who might have mental health issues. That's my specific population in behavioral health. And then now I'm saying, well, you're displaced and now you are also got addiction problems or you are homeless and you have mental health issues that need to be treated. And it's overwhelming just being homeless. So
out of all the people that are homeless, though, how many of them actually have an issue that is causing this? Or how many? I mean, when I say that, I mean the mental health, the drug addiction, that kind of thing. Or most of them, like we talked about earlier, the ones that are just out of a job and all of a sudden their world just fell out from under them.
I would say it's about a 50-50 split.
Really?
Because and then you get into the issue of when you lose everything and you are displaced, then there is some environmental depression that sits in on top of everything that's going on. So actually it helps them to have some support, some people to talk to.
So when you take a look at the folks that suffer with homelessness, the common response from a lot of people who don't deal with this, who don't know much of anything about it, is, well, why don't you just go in there and fix it? Why don't you just make them come here? Here's the shelter. Come with me. Let's go do this. You got drug addiction? Well, come here and let's fix this. You really can't make them do what we'd like them to do, even if we're trying to do it for their own good.
So even if we had someone who had addiction, who had a home, if they want to change, if they're wanting to get the help and receive the help and change their life, then they're going to do that. The same thing happens with people who are mentally ill. They may not have insurance. Maybe they haven't had insurance in years. So really, it's kind of linking them up to primary health a lot of times, addressing that and getting them into counseling and offering. And sometimes I have to tread lightly. I have to build that trust up that we were talking about before, because everything else has failed them system-wise and people might have failed them. So it's a big adjustment for them.
So are there adequate services to really help these people?
There are lots of adequate services. I sit on the Wabash Valley Homeless Coalition.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a team of people who are working together to ensure, like, we have the shelters, but most of our shelters are on wait list. We have plenty of soup kitchens. We have 4 soup kitchens I can think of off the top of my head, and then food pantries. We have a new service by Manna from 7 who does the food on the Fridays to kind of gap the weekend so that they have coverage. We don't have soup kitchens usually open then. So yeah, there's a lot of different things, laundry services, but these are things that need funded because they're doing it on their own. So if people want to give to good causes, helping somebody get a free load of laundry would be a wonderful thing to do.
When we talk about the services that are available, how do you actually communicate with these folks that are out there? Because it's most of them are so-called off the grid. I mean, it's not like we can call them. It's not like we can send them a text message. These folks aren't easy to get a hold of. So what do we do to tell them about what services are available?
I think I would refer people to an agency that is actually dealing with that. Like myself, we have Mental Health America. We have all the shelters that can provide these informations. We're all outreach services. We have different agencies that we collaborate together. So if we can connect them to one of those agencies, they can usually help get them to where they need to be. For an individual kind of facing that, that wouldn't have all that resource information, it may just not be a good conversation. So yeah. Anytime that you can help someone connect to a provider that deals with that, it probably works better.
We hear about the fact that there are folks, and you mentioned this earlier, about, you know, encampments where they're basically camped out either in some of the county parks or along the river somewhere, stuff like that. For the folks who get the impetus and they really want to help, just jumping out there is not necessarily a good thing for the uninitiated. They're right. Really, I mean, not that it's always dangerous, not that they're bad people, but unless you know what you're doing, you need to basically stick your toe in the water lightly.
Yeah, I would not suggest. We have specific agencies, including myself, that do periodically go. We are trying to develop a HOT team, which right now the Loyal Veterans Battalion kind of does that. Mm-hmm. So we want to kind of broaden that pace. So I would not, because you have to know that if you go to a place, somebody may not come out. You're going into their only home. This is now their home, their territory, mm-hmm. and you're coming and being intrusive. If you weren't invited there, then I would not suggest going.
When we talk about where these folks can go and what we as a community can do to provide them with a place to go, one of the things, too, is just as sometimes in natural disasters, these folks have pets, too, which yes. makes housing them or a place for them to go all that much more difficult.
Correct. One of the biggest barriers we have are people that do have pets. They can't necessarily go into a shelter because you would have to prove it's a service animal. And most people, these are just their pets. They might be emotional support for them.
And in a lot of cases, it's a homeless pet that just kind of, they started hanging out together along the way.
That happens quite frequently too. Or that was the last thing that they had left of their previous life before they became homeless. So it's like taking a family member and saying you're going to get rid of it for some of these folks. So I know the Terre Haute Humane Society does a tremendous job in helping the community feed because they get some donations from Chewy. Mm-hmm. But that's always something that's very much needed in the community.
So everybody wants quick and simple answers. So what do we do to fix this? You know, that's what people are looking at you for. It's like, okay, I'm not so cold and unfeeling that I don't want to help these folks. So fine.
Right.
Tell me, what do I do? Where do I write a check? And then I want this problem to get fixed. And it's not that simple, but what's a first step?
For those individuals who want to help, a lot of the churches have gotten involved over the years and done a tremendous job of volunteering for Point in Time. For putting together like toilet paper. A simple thing is toilet paper becomes a very valued commodity for those that are displaced. Hygiene packets. We have people that make those mats out of plastic bags. It's kind of a cushion, a barrier. Sleeping bags, tents for those people that choose to stay out. One of the biggest things we would like to see happen eventually in the community is have the Emergency Warming and Cooling Center, which is in the process of being completed. We're working on that right now with Brendan Kearns and one of our county commissioners. And then we're also, as a group of people, we're looking at trying to see about getting a day drop-in center, which would help tremendously.
And what is that?
That works. It's open maybe 4 to 5 hours a day. It's a place for the displaced to come in, get some respite, maybe sleep, play cards. There's other centers around the country, they could do a load of laundry, they could take a shower, they could get their mail, and it's a place to build that trust.
And from there, they could kind of maybe help get back on their feet again.
Right, you can have service providers there to help them out. So just providing information and planting seeds really in the long term helps those individuals to get where they need to be.
The economy is doing better, but still a lot of these folks, you know, the first thing, go get a job. Well, all right, that'd be fine. But, it's catch 22. You've got to be able to have a place or an email address to get a job. You've got to have a place to live. You've got to have a way to dress to be appropriate.
Take a shower.
Yeah.
You've got to brush your teeth.
Yeah, you have to be appropriate for a job interview before you can get a job. And so that's something I think that, these folks definitely need. And so we got to find a way to get them that.
We work with individuals on trying to get that done. There's a lot of employment. Like Goodwill is a wonderful place that works with people. We work with trying to help those individuals who are ready for work. Some people are not medicated. Maybe they need some, whether it's physical health or behavioral health, they may need medication. They may need to stabilize on some things before we even think about something like that. Others are in the process of applying for disability. So that usually rules you out if you get a job. Mm-hmm. So it just becomes a vicious circle. I have people that wait anywhere for 4 years before they might get approved for disability.
How hard is it for somebody in your position, not just with Hamilton Center, but some of the other groups, how hard is it for you to kind of keep up with this? I mean, because it's for no more than we have here, we have enough that it's a hill to climb.
Yeah, I can get anywhere from probably 4 to 12 calls a week. Just on people who are, some people choose to try to go to hotel rooms, which is ungodly expensive. You can't really afford that, at a lower end motel. I mean, there's people that are trying to survive that way, but then it becomes a catch-22.
Sure.
Then you can't save any money to actually get a deposit. So I meet a lot of people who, again, who might have been housed at one time. They get $755 a month, and now maybe they were using a government housing program, and now they can't use that program. How are they going to stay housed? Because rent's going to be $400 to $500 plus utilities, buying food, all those additional expenses, and you get $755. And then you've got to save for a deposit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And get everything hooked back up.
So the vast majority of folks that are listening right now, as far as I can tell, are not homeless. They don't have this problem. They're listening to the radio. Their life's maybe not perfect, but it's a whole lot better than the folks you're trying to help. So what do they do? How do they help?
I would say find, if somebody's very interested in it, we have the Wabash Valley Homeless Coalition meetings, which are every third Tuesday at Rives Hall in the upper part of the gymnasium at 11 a.m. You can come be involved with that, because that way we can help say the different things that we're working on. And that's a broader base, because we have several different agencies that participate in that.
Okay. Well, and it's a problem we need to deal with. And obviously, you guys are working on it.
So, oh, yeah.
But the problem's not solved yet. So hopefully some folks will get a hold of you. And again, Hamilton Center is a place to go. Kelly Fuller is with Hamilton Center, and you're there. You're the point person for Hamilton Center on this.
Yes, I deal with this, and I have since 2014.
Lucky so. You. It's a job. It's probably one of those jobs that at some points it's kind of a thankless job, but in other ways it's a very necessary job.
I love my job. I get to meet lots of different individuals, and I get to see different situations. I've got to see the growth of people who have actually gotten housed that I've worked with, who have gone through services, who have utilized the things that were available to them, and now they're housed and they're budgeting and they're building their lives back up, and it's really very rewarding to see that.
Kelly Fuller with Hamilton Center, thanks for spending some time with us today. If you would like to help out with the homeless situation, you can contact her at Hamilton Center. And also, too, if you have missed part of the show, want to hear more of it, listen to it back. It's available on our website right now as a podcast. I'm Frank Rush. We'll see you next weekend.
You've been listening to Focus on the Community, a weekly public affairs program that focuses on issues and events in our community. To be considered as a guest on Focus on the Community, contact us by calling 812-420-2518. Be sure and tune in again next week at this time as we focus on the community.